بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد. Okay, this is our last session and inshallah today we will go through some of the merits of muttaqun, and the best description of muttaqin of course is given by Amir al-Mu'mineen, especially in that very beautiful khutbah, khutbat al-muttaqin, Sermon 193 in Nahj al-Balagha. Now, just to recap about taqwa, what we said was that taqwa is from waqaya, meaning protection. And taqwa is a sort of protection which a person develops against spiritual harm, against justice of God, because the only thing we fear of God is His justice, nothing else. The only thing we hope from God, or the only thing we hope in this world, is the blessings of God. And the only thing we fear from God is His justice. And that justice is not only about sins. A person may not commit sins. However, even for attaining higher spiritual blessings, that justice is in place. So if you are not extra cautious, if you do not protect yourself against certain things, that justice would not allow you to reach those higher states which other servants would reach. Now, just quickly going through what we said about Khutbatul Muttaqin at the beginning. It is reported that one of the quite unknown companions of Amir al-Mu'mineen, called Hammam, it's very strange that this man is not known at all. It's in the history, in the battles of Amir al-Mu'mineen or wherever. This shows that Amir al-Mu'mineen had many unknown companions who were quite pious, quite God-fearing, but of course we don't have any record of them in the history. Now, he was a devoted man to worship. كان رجلا عابدا. عابد means someone who does much extra worship than usually ordinary people do. He said, يا أمير المؤمنين صف لي المتقين. Describe for me متقين in the way as if I am looking at them. حتى كأني أنظر إليهم. أمير المؤمنين was reluctant because he knew this man, he knew his companion, he knew about his heart, his attitude. He was somehow excited so quickly, and some of the words Amir al-Mu'mineen says at the end, it transpires that it really affected his soul and his heart. So Amir al-Mu'mineen was reluctant to reply, but after, the only thing he said, قَالَ يَا هَمَّمْ اتَّقِ اللَّهُ وَأَحْسَنْ, just fear God and do good things. However, he insisted, and then Amir al-Mu'mineen started to describe or give some description of muttaqin. Hammam was not satisfied with this reply and pushed him to speak. Thereupon, Amir al-Mu'mineen praised God and extolled him and sought his blessing on the Holy Prophet, and then said, God the Glorified, the Sublime, created the creation while He had no need for their obedience. Because the first thing which comes to mind is that, okay, what is this taqwa for? What is this fear of God? Why Allah is all the time recommending us to it? Is it for Himself? Amir al-Mu'mineen is removing this doubt or this confusion at the beginning that God does not need anyone's obedience. He doesn't need anyone's taqwa. And disobedience would not harm him. He has distributed among them their livelihood and has assigned them their positions in the world. Their positions, the livelihood of course is given to everyone, but their positions are given according to the merits that they acquire in this world. Their position, وَضَعَهُمْ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا مَوَاضِعَهُمْ. He has assigned them their position in the world according to the merits that they acquire. فَالْمُتَّقُونَ, now here Amir al-Mu'min starts to describe muttaqun. فَالْمُتَّقُونَ فِيهَا means in this world are the people of distinction. أَهْلُ الْفَضَائِلِ فَضَائِلِ is plural of فَضِيلَة, distinctions, merits. There are certain merits which of course distinguishes them from other people. Now, what are these? Of course, we cannot go through all the sermon. I have just chosen and picked a few sentences, a few statements of the khutbah. First of all, منطقهم الصواب. You see that this completely distinguishes them from ordinary mu'mineen. Their speech is proper. That means it does not contain, first of all, it doesn't contain any sin. Any sin includes what? Swearing at people, backbiting, saying vain words, and also when they speak rightly. Sawab means something which hits the targets. So when they speak correctly. Now, what are the requirements of such a quality? First of all, you have to be silent most of the time, isn't it? Because you cannot all the time be right. When you want to speak correctly and rightly, you have to be most of the time silent, because the person who speaks a lot makes lots of mistakes. I mean, Rumi describes a brother of himself, a religious brother, a brother in faith. He says that كان لي فيما مضى أخ في الله, in the past I had a brother in faith. And the commentators of Nahjul Balagha have disputed who this brother was. Some say he was Abu Zar and others. Anyhow, وَكَانَ يُؤْذِمُهُ فِي عَيْنِي. First of all, what made him quite important in my eye was صِغَرُ الدُّنْيَا فِي عَيْنِهِ, was that dunya in his eyes was quite unimportant. That made him important in my eye. And then he says, one of the descriptions he gives about this person is, وَكَانَ أَكْثَرُ دَهْرِهِ صَامِتًا. Most of his times, he was silent. But when he spoke wisdom. When he spoke in a way that everyone was impressed by his knowledge, by his rectitude, by his integrity of character. This is how the speech of a person would be sawab. So in that very one sentence, are lots of qualities which are somehow hidden in muttaqin. If they want to speak in a proper way, they have to have knowledge, they have to have wisdom, they have to have silence, they have to have patience, because most of the time we speak out of impatience, isn't it? And also, they shouldn't be afraid of loneliness. They are not alone at all, because they are always with God. Anyhow, so, منطقهم الصواب. This is one characteristic. The second characteristic of muttaqin is ملبسهم الاقتصاد. Their dress is moderation. Now, dress here doesn't mean actual dress. It means their behavior, their manner, the whole ambience of their lives are moderation. They don't go to extremes. Extremes, of course, extreme may mean different things for different people. However, Amir al-Mu'min has stressed again and again. Now, if we put this in context, we see that, for example, take the example of Khawarij. They were so extreme in forcing people on faith, pushing people because of faith. And then they had hard times for themselves. They didn't sleep at night. They had all these signs on their foreheads. On the other hand, we had Banu Umayyah and Muawiyah and others who were completely relaxed and very much indulgent in worldly things. Now, neither of this is correct. Iqtisad, moderation, goes in between. وَمَلْبَسُهُمْ الْاَقْتِسَادِ وَمَشْيُهُمْ At-tawadu. Again, mash, which means walking, of course. Their walking is humbleness. However, mash in Arabic also means behavior, manner. Again, their manners, apart from iqtisad, which is moderation, is humbleness. Now, humbleness is something that no one can reach taqwa unless experience it in the heart. It's not something to somehow show off to people. It's something which is related to the heart. I have seen some books, they make this humbleness a means for people to express their arrogance, actually, because they cannot somehow go over other people. They cannot supersede over other people because the lack of certain abilities. Then they show off a sort of humbleness. I'm not going to somehow to show to these people that I'm superior, I'm a very humble person, I'm not going to go after such thing. This is not the type of humbleness that we are talking here. This humbleness is in the heart. It falls into the heart, actually. And that makes them completely selfless, because, of course, they always compare themselves with the power of God and what God has given them. So these three qualities, منطقهم الصواب, ملبسهم الاقتصاد, مشيهم التواضع. I think if we practice these three, we are muttaqun. We don't need anything else. Other things would follow. So منطق, ملبس, مش, these three things, if we try to exercise and practice in our lives, then certainly we will be included in muttaqun. Whatever is mentioned afterwards follows these three very, very important concepts. غضوا أبصارهم أما حرم الله عليهم. They keep their eyes close to what Allah has made unlawful for them. Now, of course, if you listen to mystics, they go long way in saying that, okay, everything which pertains to this world, you have to close your eyes to it. That's, of course, something different. We're not talking about that. That's a mystical concept. As the Prophet said, غُضُّوا أَبْصَارَكُمْ تَرَوْنَ الْعَجَائِبِ. Close your eyes to see the wonders of this world. Close your eyes means close your eyes towards whatever you see in this world. Close the eyes of your heart to the pleasures of this world. And then you will see the wonders of Malakut, the wonders of the world of God. As long as you are preoccupied with this world, you cannot see that side. You either can look at this side or the other side, unless if you are quite well-versed in both, you become like those Ahlul Yaqeen, then of course you can have look at both sides. But initially, they use this hadith to say that, of course, keeping your eyes closed towards anything which is related to this world, not having any love for anything, that would bring you love of God. Here, Amir al-Mu'minin is not alluding to that. It's just very literally means that they do not look at whatever Allah has forbidden them to look at, whatever it is. وَوَقَفُوا أَسْمَاءَهُمْ عَلَى الْأَلْمِ النَّافِئِ لَهُمْ. Now, here, our eyes have a right upon us. And our ears have rights upon us. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has rights upon us because He has given us eyes, He has given us ears. And we have to thank Him for that. وَجَعَلَ لَكُمُ السَّمْعَ وَالْأَبْصَارَ وَالْأَفْئِدَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَشْكُرُونَ. He has put for you, made for you eyes, ears, and hearts. Maybe you just sometimes desire to thank Him. Now, thanking, we have two types of thanks. One is by tongue, the other is practical thank. Thanking through what you do. Now, if we use our eyes in the proper way, I mean, for example, you study the Quran, you study knowledge, you learn things, you look at things, you take lessons from, this is shock of your eyes, isn't it? You are actually giving thanks to God. The same thing is ears. If you just use it for listening to vain talks, to backbites, to certain music or something like that, you just have wasted the ni'mah of Allah which is given to you. By what Amir al-Mu'minin says, وَقَفُوا أَسْمَاءَهُمْ عَلَى الْعِلْمِ النَّافِعِ لَهُمْ. They put their ears to that knowledge which is beneficial to them. Actually, you have given the thanks for your ears as well. Now, another quality, which had in Mu'minun as well, and in Ahlul Yaqeen to the very ultimate level, is نُزَّلَتْ أَنفُسُهُمْ مِنْهُمْ فِي الْبَلَاءِ كَالَّتِي نُزَّلَتْ فِي الرَّخَاءِ. They remain in the time of trials as though they remain in comfort. Now, this is very difficult, isn't it? You do not waver, you do not change, especially your attitude towards God. Sometimes when we are put into certain trials and tests, we don't say anything, of course. Who dares to say anything? We don't dare saying anything. However, the heart turns back from God. The heart turns back. You somehow feel uncomfortable with God. Now, this is because we are not trained about why these things come through, why these things happen. Someone was telling me very recently, that he was upset about something which was related to his family, and day and night he was praying, God, give me some relief about this, why this is happening to me. Now, one night, he saw Imam Khomeini in his dream. He was praying behind Imam Khomeini. And after the prayer, Imam Khomeini told him, summoned him, come here. Very kindly. He said, do you know this dua you are making? If God wants to listen to you, he should stop creation. He shouldn't create anything else. You are actually asking something which goes against the whole system of creation of Allah. Because of your, well, this is not Imam Khomeini told him, but this is what I am adding. Because of your selfish attitude, you want all things for yourself. So you cannot bear that something or someone who's related to you is in such a trouble. However, many other people have such troubles. You never care. You never care. And this is a system of creation. God is somehow mixing people with each other and trying them with different things. It happens everywhere. You never cared about others. Now that it has come to you, your heart is somehow trembling or something like that. Now, for muttaqin, this is not the case. نُزَّلَتْ أَنفُسُهُمْ مِنْهُمْ فِي الْبَلَاءِ كَالَّتِي نُزَّلَتْ فِي الرَّحَاءِ. In times of comfort, in times of hardship, it's as if it's equal. Not, of course, that they are happy with bala. No. Ibn Arabi has a very beautiful statement in Futuhat al-Makkiyah. He's about rida, about contentment with what God does. He says, الرِّضَى بِالْقَضَىٰ لَا يَلْزَمْ الرِّضَى بِالْمَقْضِىٰ. To be content with decree of God doesn't mean that you are content with what's happening as well. You may go through a very hard time. Like, for example, Imam Hussein is losing all his children and all this. That's a difficult situation, isn't it? Imam Hussein is not happy seeing that his sons and children and relatives are being killed. He's not happy about it. But it's content with the decree of God. So the maqdi, what is decreed, may be difficult. We may go through things which we do not like. However, as I said before, it's like, for example, if someone's limb is being amputated by a physician, by a doctor. He's not happy about that at all, of course, losing one limb. But he's happy with the doctor who's doing it, isn't it? Because the doctor is doing a favor by cutting the limb, actually preventing the spread of disease, for example, or his death. He's happy with the doctor, not happy with the amputation. Now, with regards to these tribulations and difficulties in life, we may not, of course, be happy, suffer. However, what this is saying that in relation to God, it's the same for them. It's the same for them. Time of comfort and time of suffering. Now again, these go beyond the level of mu'minun, isn't it? Beyond the level of ordinary mu'minun. Okay, what Amir al-Mu'minin has repeatedly mentioned about muttaqin, about his brother in faith, عَظُمَ الْخَالِقُ فِي أَنفُسِهِمْ فَصَغُرَ مَا دُونَهُ فِي أَعْيُنِهِمْ. Now again, I said, this is a description. It's not a prescription. They are like this. However, it's good for us to try to exercise to be like that so that one day we become like it. If a person has this taqwa, then of course these things would happen for them automatically. The greatness of the Creator is seated in their heart, and so everything else appears small in their eyes. That's why they're very easygoing. They don't care much about this world. Why? Because God is so great in their heart. And because God is great in their heart, they are great in the eyes of God. As Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq said, if you want to know what is your position with God, how much God cares about you or loves you, see how much is the position of God in the value of God in your heart. It's a reciprocal sort of thing. Okay, the next quality. Now, this is a bit awkward, actually. قُلُوبُهُمْ مَحْزُونَ. Their hearts are grieved. I don't know why this has come here. That's the wrong translation. Let me see. Yeah, وَشُرُورُهُمْ مَأْمُونَ. This is the right translation. People are safe from their evil. No evil they have to offer to anyone, actually. Now, haven't we been told all the time that mu'min has happiness in the heart? So why here Imam alayhi salam says that their hearts is grieved all the time? All the time. Any explanation? Now, usually we say faith brings tranquility to the heart, isn't it? Peace. أَلَا بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَتْمَئِنُّ الْقُلُوبِ. With the dhikr of Allah, the heart would find peace, would find tranquility. And a mu'min is always happy in the heart. However, here Amir al-Mu'min is saying something opposite. He's saying that they are always grieved, their hearts. Now, Amir al-Mu'min has a description of the Prophet, peace be on him, and he says, كَانَ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَعَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ حَزِينَ, something like this. Yeah. كَانَ مُتَوَاصِلُ الْأَحْزَانِ. Yeah, of course, the face always smile. That's fine. However, what about that grief in the heart? About the Prophet, as I said, Amir al-Mu'min says, كَانَ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ مُتَوَاصِلُ الْأَحْزَانِ. His grief was continuous. Never that grief went out of his heart. Now, why the grief should be in the heart? Why the grief should be in the heart? The qurb is difficult to get. Yeah. And the closer you go, you become more eager, isn't it? The eagerness of getting closer and closer. It frustrates you, actually. This is what all the mystics have always complained about. That we get a bit close, then God says, okay, stop there, don't come closer. You stop there, I don't want you to come closer. Just like Musa, when he went and spoke to the Lord, and God spoke to him, he thought, well, I'm now very close to God, who's closer than me? I mean, I'm just imagining. And then he said, Rabbi arani andur ilayk, let me look at you. That eagerness comes. Now, we have been told that the mu'minun should never have huzn in their hearts. That is, we have two types of grief. Grief for this world, and this type of grief, which is that distance which always exists between man and God. Until, inshallah, we go to paradise. There shouldn't be any grief in paradise, but the distance is still there. I don't know what happens. The distance is still there, but the grief is not there. How it happens, we don't know. Inshallah, we have to go and see. But this distance always make a person to grieve. And also, apart from the distance, is looking at one's position, receiving all the time, and not being able to give anything back to God. That also brings this grief in the heart. If we ponder on it, if we actually pay attention to it, if we don't pay attention to it, we are always, somehow we think that God owes something to us all the time. But when you get to this level of taqwa, you all the time think that you are indebted to God. There is something. Well, He is giving you everything. You cannot give anything back. And this brings that grief in the heart. And also the distance. Yes, please. Yeah, that's distance. Yeah, distance. Of course, we never reach, because if we reach, everything is finished. No, we never reach. Even in paradise, we never reach. Okay? Because God is infinite. However, yes, in this world, because of the state of the heart, which turns towards the world, towards God, here, there, it's a very frustrating situation in this world. One may think, oh God, please, please, take us sooner rather than later, isn't it? It's quite frustrating to continue like this. And that's why, I mean, we mentioned, I don't know whether I have brought it here or not, وَلَوْلَا الْعَجَالُ الَّذِي كَتَبَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِمْ. If it was not for the appointed time that Allah had written for them, لَمْ تَسْتَقِرَّ أَرْوَاهُمْ فِي أَجْسَادِهِمْ طَرْفَةَ عَيْنٍ. Their souls wouldn't have stayed in their bodies for one blink of an eye. It would have gone. But what can we do? Allah has imprisoned us here, isn't it? We are imprisoned by God in this world. Well, we have good prisoner, alhamdulillah. Now, قلوبهم محزونة, this type of huzn, this type of grief, وشرورهم, good prison keeper, sorry, we are not good prisoners, but we have good prison keeper. وشرورهم مأمونة, and of course they have no shar, no evil. And people are safe from, and this is the way it's translated, actually the present translation of Nahjul Balagha, they are protected against evil. I don't think this is the right translation. Anyhow, now another thing: أرادتهم الدنيا فلم يريدوها وأسرتهم ففدوا أنفسهم منها. The world aimed at them. The world goes after them, but they don't go after dunya. They run away from it. In the heart. Of course, dunya may come as wealth and property, but they do not get somehow infatuated with it, so that they lose their souls to dunya. And if it captures them, فَفَدَوْا أَنفُسَهُمْ مِنْهَا, they free themselves from it by ransom. Now, what that ransom is of course, a true exercise of faith and giving away all the love for this world. This is the ransom they give to free themselves from the clutches of the world. Now, then Amir al-Mu'minin mentions two attitudes of the muttaqun, at night and during the day. How they pass their nights and how they pass their days. Not, of course, watching TV or something like that. At night, what is what they do? أما الليل فصافون أقدامهم تالين لأجزاء القرآن يرتلونها ترتيلا. During the night, they are upstanding on their feet, reading portions of the Quran. Why upstanding on their feet? That means in Salat. And we know that reciting the Quran in Salat has 100 times more reward than reciting it outside Salat, especially if you are standing and reciting the Quran. That is actually the prime time when the meanings of the Quran reveals itself to you, to the heart. That we may just recite the Quran during the day, we understand what the sentence says, but there are certain gems of meaning which the heart cannot hunt, cannot detect. However, during the night, when they stand before God in prayer, they recite the Quran. After Hamd, they recite a surah or part of a surah. In that recitation comes those meanings which God gives to His special servants as a favor, as a bounty, which not everyone, of course. And that, when you have an experience which you cannot describe to anyone else, or a meaning you get from the verses of the Quran that you cannot explain to anyone else, you have to be very happy. Because that is the time when God has instilled something in your heart. Because those things are not describable in ordinary language. It's not something that you can write in a book or read in a book or explain to other people. It's a direct and private relationship between God and you. That's all. And for every person, it may be different. And as I said, the prime time this may happen is in the middle of the night. And the prime type of practice which brings this about is what Amir al-Mu'minin says. And this is why even when the Quran describes Ahlul Kitab, وَمِنْ أَهْلِ الْكِتَابِ أُمَّةٌ قَائِمَةٌ يَتْلُونَ آيَاتِ اللَّهِ بِاللَّيْلِ وَالنَّهَارِ. There are a standing nation. Standing here means just like what Amir al-Mu'minin says, standing in Salat from among Ahlul Kitab. They recite the verses of the Lord. Bible, of course. These are revelations of God as well. And God would instill in their hearts still those meanings, which may have come in different language, different phrases, but the structure of the sentence and the apparent meaning is not important. What God instills in the heart by those things is very, very important. Now, أَمَّا اللَّيْلِ. During the night, they are upstanding on their feet, reading portions of the Quran, reciting it in a well-measured way. يُرَتْلُونَهَا تَرْتِيلًا. That means you cannot do with translation. You have to recite the Quran the way it's revealed, because it has a melody, it has a harmony which impresses the heart as well as the meanings. As you see here, when you recite them, it's not the apparent meaning of the sentences which are important. It's the melody by which you recite and the way your heart is affected by it, and then the meaning which is instilled to your heart. And that meaning may be quite different for different people. You can imagine when the Prophet was standing every night for a few hours reciting the Quran in Salat. Why was he doing it? It was because of this sort of private communication and that installation of meanings in the heart. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا إنا سنلقي عليك قولا ثقيلا. We want to throw at you a heavy word, isn't it? How you recite the Quran, that heavy meaning comes to your heart. Now you may say Prophet knew the Quran by heart, of course. Not only by heart, he knew it by his soul, by his flesh, by his blood. It was him who brought down the Quran actually. However, still you see he recites the Quran. What is that for? Is it just to get the sawab of that? I don't think Prophet needed that sawab, of course. It's for something real, something true. Okay, this is the night. No, I don't think here Amir Rumi is referring to Maghrib and Isha. He's referring to the Salat before dawn, Salatul Layl. This is the time when they are, of course, because in Maghrib and Isha, the Imam recites the Quran. It's very formal, okay? It's very formal. This is that very private moment of every servant with God. No. Before Fajr. Before Fajr, yeah. Now, one other thing here. Very interesting. يحزنون به أنفسهم ويستثيرون به دواء أدائهم. They create through it grief in their souls. They create grief by the Quran. We have in hadith that Quran has been revealed with a saddening, with a grieving melody, and recited in that way. People nowadays may say, why always we talk about grief, we talk about sadness, we talk about, for example, crying and such things. Why shouldn't we be happy? Why shouldn't we be somehow beaming all the time? You always talk about grief, crying. Well, yes, of course. When you come in your relation with this world and people, that's an absolutely different type of attitude than when you stand before your Lord. Here, you are standing before someone who, first of all, you are eager to get closer to him. Secondly, you feel indebted to him. Thirdly, you feel that you have nothing to pay back in exchange for what he has given you. And fourthly, there are certain things which come to your heart you cannot describe here, which makes you actually grieved. يُحَزَّنُونَ بِهِ أَنفُسَهُمْ Through that, of course, through that recitation of the Qur'an, they bring grief in their hearts and they seek the cure of their ailments. This is what the Qur'an says, isn't it? وَنُنَزِّلُ مِنَ الْقُرْآنِ مَا هُوَ شِفَاءٌ وَرَحْمَةٌ لِلْمُؤْمِنِ is cure for mu'min, is cure for the heart, of course. It's دَوَاءُ الْقُلُوبِ, not cure for the bodies. It's cure for the heart. Now, they seek the cure of their heartly diseases, the diseases which are diseases of the soul. And unless a person practices this, they cannot diagnose those diseases. Because the disease of the soul is a very sort of vexatious disease because there is no diagnosis for it unless you go into such practice. Then you diagnose that, wow, what a disease I have, I never knew about it. In the Quran, by reciting the Quran, first of all, they diagnose their disease, and secondly, they find a cure for it. What should I do to cure that disease of the heart? Now, when they are reciting the Quran, in that middle of the night, in that very private moment, فَإِذَا مَرُّوا بَآيَةٍ فِيهَا تَشْوِيقٌ رَكَنُوا إِلَيْهَا طَمَعًا وَتَطَلَّعَتْ نُفُوسُهُمْ إِلَيْهَا شَوْقًا وَظَنُّوا أَنَّهَا نُصْبَ أَعْيُنُهُمْ. If they come across a verse containing encouragement of paradise, they rely on it avidly and their spirits turn towards it eagerly and they feel as if it is in front of their eyes. Have you ever imagined yourself in paradise? No. Well, that's fabulous. I mean, if you imagine yourself in paradise, and especially what Allah mentions in the Quran about paradise, just imagine that. Just imagine. And this is what Amir al-Mu'minin says. When you recite these verses, imagine. إِنَّ الْمُتَّقِينَ فِي جَنَّاتٍ وَنَهَرٍ فِي مَقَعَدِ صَدْقٍ. In a place where they are always, where they are always confirmed, acknowledged by Malik and Muqtadir, by the powerful king. No matter what you do, you're always liked. Your work is always acknowledged by God. Well, he's very happy. And then all those things that God mentions, that whatever you want is there. Well, we cannot go through those details until we come across these verses and then imagine that we are there. So this is what they do. When they pass by a verse in which there is encouragement for paradise, they rely on it. They say, well, this is what I'm going to achieve at the end. This is the end. So everything else will become really trivial for them in this world. And وَإِذَا مَرُّوا بِآيَةٍ فِيهَا تَخْوِيفٌ. If they come across a verse in which there is, it contains fear of hell. أَسْغَوْا إِلَيْهَا مَسَامِعَ قُلُوبِهِمْ. Look, مَسَامِعَ قُلُوبِهِمْ. The ears of their heart listens to it. And when the ear of the heart listens to that sort of graphic description of hell, the person would become completely humbled and feel as if though the sound of hell and its cries are reaching their ears. Well, this one I don't like actually to think about it actually. Well, maybe because we are reliant on mercy of God too much. Now, this was about their night. This is the night of Muttaqin. Amma al-Nahar. Now, why Amir al-Mu'minin has singled that out from whatever they do during the night, has singled that out because this is the most important feature of a muttaqi during the night. They do not miss these things. These are jewels of their time, the gems of their time which Allah has given them. So they would not let it go. Now, when it comes to the day, in day they are not that simpleton people who don't know anything. Whatever you say, tell them, MashaAllah, InshaAllah, Allahu Akbar, La ilaha illallah. No. Amma al-Nahar, fa-hulama'u, ulama' abrarun atqiya. In the day, they are enduring. Well, they have great forbearance. No matter what happens to them, no matter what people do, they take it. They don't say anything. And they are learned ulama. And of course, to become an alim, you have to go and learn, seek knowledge and all these things. And all these happen during the day for them. And they are abrar, virtuous, and atqiya, God-fearing. And abrar, of course, people come to them, they have their needs, whatever. They do all the necessary, they take all necessary steps to help people. Now, these four things, hulama'u, during the day, hulama'u, ulama'u, abrarun, atqiya, especially that ulama'u, they know how they have to conduct their lives. Now, you look at Amir al-Mu'min, for example. In the middle of the night, you know that he was doing, or the Prophet, several hours of prayer and recitation of the Quran. Then when the day came, for example, in jihad, They knew all the tactics and the strategy of a war. They knew how a battle should be conducted. They knew how they have to move against the enemy. They knew how they have managed a society, for example. They knew, in spite of people talking about God, whether they are right or wrong. Like, for example, Khawarij. It's very difficult. It was very difficult for Amir al-Mu'mineen to fight against Khawarij. Fighting against Muawiyah was very easy because he was indulgent. And people knew that. But for Khawarij, who always talked about God, always talked about piety, they were not missing any night prayer. During the night, you could have heard the recitation of the Quran from these houses, their houses, and then Amir al-Mu'min going and fighting and killing them. And then he said, "Ana faqa'tu ayn al-fitna." I plucked the eye of fitna, and no one could do it but me. Why Amir al-Mu'min could do it and no one else could do it? Because everyone else was afraid of this piety that they saw. But Amir al-Mu'min had that knowledge, of course. That knowledge would have allowed him to act properly. لا يرضون من أعمالهم القليل ولا يستكثرون الكثير. Even nowadays, you see, all Muslims are now backing these jihadis in Syria and other places because of the apparent Allahu Akbar, La ilaha illallah, we fight for God before. People are, they think less and they act according to their emotions and sensations more. And this is what Amir al-Mu'min is saying here. For muttaqin, this is not the case. They are ulama. أبرار أتقياء لا يرضون من أعمالهم القليل ولا يستكثرون الكثير. They are never satisfied with their meager good acts. Now, what we would describe, they have plenty of good acts, but still Amir al-Mu'min says that they see it meager. Whatever they do is quite meager for them. Whatever other people do, they see it quite a lot. This is the attitude of a muttaqi person. Whatever other people do, although they may do it much less than them, but they see those because they say, I don't know about their intention, I know about my own intention. So I know I have shortcomings, they may not have shortcomings. They are never happy. لا يرضون من أعمالهم القليل ولا يستكثرون الكثير. And no matter how big is their acts, they don't regard it to be great. فَهُمْ لَأَنفُسِهِمْ مُتَّهِمُونَ. In everything, the first person who's accused by them are themselves. They are always accused. They accuse themselves. And مِنْ أَعْمَالِهِمْ مُشْفَقُونَ. They're always afraid of their أعمال. And this is what Allah commends in the Quran, isn't it? وَالَّذِينَ يُؤْتُونَ مَا أَتَوُوا. Those who give whatever they have given in terms of worship, in terms of charity, despite that وَقُلُوبُهُمْ وَجِلَةٌ, their hearts are fearful. وَقُلُوبُهُمْ وَجِلَةٌ أَنَّهُمْ إِلَىٰ رَبِّهِمْ رَاجِعُونَ, that they are going to go back to their Lord. No matter what we do in this world, no matter what we do, just thinking of going back to the Lord, to one who has created us, makes us fearful, isn't it? So, وَالَّذِينَ in Surah Mu'minun, وَالَّذِينَ يُؤْتُونَ مَا عَتَوْا وَقُلُوبُهُمْ وَجِلَةٌ أَنَّهُمْ إِلَىٰ رَبِّهِمْ رَاجِعُونَ أُولَٰئِكَ يُسَارِعُونَ فِي الْخَيْرَاتِ وَهُمْ لَهَا صَابِغُونَ. These are the ones who speed towards khayrat and they take it. The verse is actually criticizing the kuffar who were boasting about their property and wealth and such things. أَيَحْسَبُونَ أَنَّمَا نُمِدُّهُمْ بِهِ مِنْ أَمْوَالٍ وَبَنِينَ نُصَارِعُ لَهُمْ فِي الْخَيْرَاتِ. Do they think what we give them in terms of wealth, children, that we are bringing good things for them? بَلْ لَا يَشْعُرُونَ. They don't know. And then God mentions, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ هُمْ مِنْ خَشْيَةِ رَبِّهِمْ مُشْفِقُونَ. Those who are always on fear, from the fear of the Lord, and then وَالَّذِينَ يُؤْتُونَ مَا عَتَوْا They give whatever they give and still they are, their hearts are fearful. These are the ones who get that khayrat which people are speeding towards us. So, مِنْ أَعْمَالِهِمْ مُشْفَقُونَ Okay, what are their signs? What are their signs? فَمِنْ عَلَامَةِ أَحَدِهِمْ It's a beautiful khutbah actually, very beautiful. فَمِنْ عَلَامَةِ أَحَدِهِمْ أنك ترى له قوة في دين وحزما في لين and of their signs is that you see them having strength in religion. What that mean? Strength in religion. They never waver. They never hesitate. And whatever is mentioned in faith, they take it strongly. يا يحيى خذ الكتابة بِقُوَّةٍ يَحْيَى Take the book with strength. You will see this in Muttaqun. Taking the book with strength. About Musa, when Allah gave him Torah, he says, خُذْهَا بِقُوَّةٍ Take it with strength. وَأْمُرْ أَحْلَكَ يَأْخُذُوا بِأَحْسَنَهَا And tell your people to take as best as they can. To take it as best as they can. However, about Musa himself says, خُذْهَا بِقُوَّةٍ You take it with strength. Because you are Musa. They are weak in their faith. But you are Musa. Here, Muttaqun have this strength in taking the book. قُوَّةً فِي دِين وَحَزْمًا فِي لِين Prudence along leniency. Along with leniency. They are prudent. They make plans. However, they don't, because of their plans, they are not harsh with people. They are quite lenient. They are quite flexible. And this is what Prophet was, isn't it? How Prophet was. Flexible, lenient. So, حَزْمًا فِي لِين وَحِرْسًا فِي عِلْم And they have eagerness for knowledge. And this is what most of our mu'minun don't have actually. But taqwa brings that eagerness for knowledge that one never satisfies of the knowledge that they have. And knowledge in forbearance. Because usually when people become knowledgeable, they lose that forbearance towards other people. Because people are ignorant, they do things, they say things which are quite ignorant and quite unreasonable in their eyes. So sometimes you find ulama are quite quick-tempered. But for muttaqun, they mix this ilm and helm together. They have knowledge, but they don't look down at people. They have knowledge, but they are quite tolerant towards the ignorance of other people. وَقَصْدًا فِي غَنَى In affluence, they have moderation. If God gives them affluence, they live moderately. They do not exceed the limits. وَخُشُوعًا فِي عِبَادَةٍ Now, this is, of course, one of the greatest signs of muttaqi. In worship, they have that khushu' and humility of the heart. Of course, one may not see it in their physical body, but they have always that khushu' in their hearts. وَتَجَمُّلًا فِي فَاقَ Adornment in poverty. Even if they are poor, people cannot see that. Cannot see that they are poor. Because of that moderation, whether they are rich or they are poor, they live in a way that no one can realize. For example, this person is now poor because they don't want to show off their poverty because they do not have hope in anyone. Their only hope is in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. وَصَبْرًا فِي شَدَّةٍ And endurance in hardship, very clear. وَطَلَبًا فِي حَلَالٍ وَنَشَاطًا فِي هُدَى And what they seek is only halal, lawful, and pleasure in guidance, وَتَحَرُّجًا أَنْ تَمَعْ And avoiding greed, which is actually the disease of our time. يَعْمَلُ الْأَعْمَالُ الصَّالِحَةُ وَهُوَ عَلَى وَجَلٍ He performs virtuous deeds, yet he is quite afraid. What? Oh, okay, we describe this, this Amir al-Mu'min is saying it in other words, actually. Now, this is very important. يُمْسِي وَهَمُّهُ الشُّكْرُ وَيُصْبِحْ وَهَمُّهُ الذِّكْرُ Now, when you want to go to bed at the end of the night, What is your main preoccupation? Now, for muttaqin, the main preoccupation is, how can I thank God? That's the main preoccupation of a muttaqi. So he enters the night anxious to offer thanks. What I received during the day, can I actually thank God for it? Of course, we cannot thank. And that adds to the grief of their heart, isn't it? We cannot thank him by no way. In the morning, when they wake up, what is our preoccupation? What is the most important thing if you are a businessman, it's our business. If you are a scholar, it's our lessons, readings, all different business that you have. However, for a muttaqi, hammuhu dhikr. The preoccupation is remembrance of God. Now, yabitu hadran, at night he sleeps with fear. He passes the night in fear and rises in the morning in joy. Why at the night in fear, in the morning in joy? Why? It should be the opposite, because at night we want to sleep. Okay, it's good time now, we sleep. We are quite happy. And in the morning we wake up, oh my God, all these piles of work in front of us. Now, Amir al-Mu'min explains it here, of course. Fear, lest his time is passed in forgetfulness during the day. And joy over the favor and mercy received by him again in a new day, isn't it? We may have passed our yesterday in forgetfulness, that's yabitu hadaran, but in the next morning we have the joy, the muttaqin have the joy again that now this is a new day. And I can start from the beginning. And I can do dhikr of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, remembrance. Tarahu qariban amaluh. Now, because Hammam said, I want you to describe them for me as if I can see them. Now, here Amir al-Mu'min is mentioning, when you look at one of them, you see. It's like this. Tarahu qariban amaluh. قَلِيلًا زَلَلُ حَاشًا قَلْبُ. You will see his hopes simple, not having like long ambitions, aspirations. His shortcomings few, his slips actually. He doesn't make many mistakes. His slips are few, his heart fearing. خَاشًا قَلْبُ. قَانِعَةً نَفْسُ. His soul is always satisfied and content. And this is the highest bounty that God would give to a person, that the heart is satisfied. Because what we are all the time after is satisfaction, isn't it? At the end of the day, what we are after is satisfaction, which we never catch it, because it's always ahead of us. Now, when you look inside, then contentment comes. This satisfaction, qana'atan nafsu, manzuran aklu, his meal small and simple. Harizan dinu, his attitude, his religion safe, harizan dinu, his attitude easygoing, sahlan amru, and that means, in transactions, in family life, with friends, in traveling, they are quite easy going. They somehow are in harmony with everything and everyone, as we have in traditions. In transactions, for example, a mu'min is quite easy to do business with, to sell things, to buy things. It's quite easy. Why? Why is it easy? Because these things are not important for him. He has hope in the fadlullah, in the grace of God. Rather than all the time thinking that, okay, how much I'm losing, how much I'm gaining. That's something which our calculating mind brings. But sometimes it makes us stiffen heart in everything. For muttaqi, that's not the case. Quite easygoing. Sahlan amru harizan dinu mayyatatan shahwatu. His desires are dead. His anger is suppressed. So you never see them expressing their angers. الخير منه مأمون والشر منه مأمون. Good alone is expected from him. Evil from him is not to be feared. That means no one fears that this man or this woman is going to harm me. For muttaqin, they are always, people feel safe with them. And of course, people feel that they can put their needs to them. إن كان في الغافلين كتب في الذاكرين. Even if he is found among those who forget, غافلين, he is counted among those who remember. Why? Because even, for example, if they go to a family party, okay, they are quite sociable as well. Not that those isolated people, they are quite sociable. If even they go to a party, family party or whatever, and everyone is ignorant of God, negligent, he is not negligent. The heart is quite active in remembering God. وَإِنْ كَانَ فِي الذَّاكِرِينَ And he is among those who remember, because sometimes those who remember, like for example in Salatul Jama'ah, supposedly in Salatul Jama'ah we are to be from among Dhakirin, isn't it? But many of us are not among Dhakirin, we are in Ghafilin. But for Muttaqi, he is not written with Ghafilin. Okay, let's move quickly, leave that. Maybe you read all these yourself. Now, if he keeps away from a person, it's not because of arrogance, it's not because of personal issues. بُعْدُهُ أَمَّنْ تَبَعَدَ عَنْهُ زُهْدٌ وَنَزَاهَ He's keeping away from others is by way of... Now, زُهْدٌ means that not asceticism in that sense. Again, this is not a good translation. It means he doesn't have any desire to gain anything from them. Or he doesn't want to be to indulge in things that those people are indulging in. That's zuhd. Turning away from... If they turn away from someone because they're turning away from the worldly indulgence. Zuhdun wa nazaha and purification. And his nearness to whom he approaches is by way of leniency and mercifulness. وَدُنُوُّهُ مِمَّنْ دَنَا مِنْهُ لِينٌ وَرَحْمَةٌ If they approach someone, if they make friends with someone, it's because they want to have mercy upon them. It's because they're kind. That's the only reason. They don't want to somehow extract money out of them or take any other benefit. His keeping away is not because of arrogance and feeling of majesty, nor his nearness by way of deceit and cheating. Now, the end, of course, is quite dramatic. قَالَ فَسَعِقَ حَمَّامُ سَعْقَةً كَانَتْ نَفْسُهُ فِيهَا حَمَّامُ actually cried, make a big cry and swooned and passed away. This is how that admonition worked actually. This is what Amir al-Mu'minin was fearing actually. When he asked him, he said, just اتق الله واحسن, don't ask. It's related that Hammam passed into a deep swoon and then expired. Then Amir al-Mu'minin said, أما والله لقد كنت أخافها عليه. Verily by Allah, I had this fear about him. I knew his heart cannot take all these descriptions of muttaqin. And then he said, هكذا تصنع المواعظ البالغة بأهلها. Effective advice produced such effects on receptive minds. Of course, not all of them would die, but they are quite impressed. The way these admonitions go. Okay, Alhamdulillah. It's about the Muttaqin. We have about 5 to 7 minutes for any question or comment. Please do not swoon. Do not die, please. Yes. Well, probably what is mentioned in the Quran are those very significant signposts of akhlaq, actually. And many of them, of course, is related to the way we have to relate to God, have connection with, establish connection with God, and many of them in, of course, social life. And I think what is mentioned here is quite similar in the same vein. It just expounds on that. Like, for example, when the Quran says, إِنَّمَا الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الَّذِينَ هُمْ فِي صَلَاتِهِمْ خَاشِعُونَ مُؤْمِنُونَ خَاشِعُونَ. Here, of course, خَاشِعَةٌ قَلْبُ. Always their heart is خَاشِع. So I think those ethical and moral verses in the Quran are among the most important and significant verses, especially for us in the way we have to deal with other people and also with God and with our family, certainly, especially the parents. Yes. As I said, they are descriptive in the sense that, yeah, when a person has taqwa, this is how actually his qualities emanate from him. Now, it's prescriptive in the sense that we have to try to become like this by forcing it upon ourselves. Gradually, we find that attitude of taqwa. Also, they are symptomatic in the sense that if we do not see these qualities in a person, we can judge how much taqwa, for example, they have. Yeah. Okay, anything else? Fine. Thank you very much. Putting up with me, you are quite from Muttaqin because you are quite patient in all this series, and inshallah, we see each other again. Thank you.